ESPN Radio 93.5 and Sunny 95.3.
What a pleasure, Mondays and Fridays, to get with some wisdom, some sense in the world. Mm-hmm. Brand new Common Sense Party Chair, Mike Ditka. Are you in Florida, Coach?
I'm in Florida, yeah. I'm still here.
Great to have Mike on the radio, Hall of Famer. Unbelievable. He's Mike Ditka. Brother Johnny, the Thomas Edison of our time in oil and gas, and I understate the situation. Johnny's in New Orleans. Johnny, good morning.
Good morning, CJ.
Great to have both of you on. And again, we search for common sense in this world of chaos. We begin this morning with sequestration. The sequestration fight continues in Washington. And as of this morning, apparently we're into it.
President Obama doesn't think any of the pain caused by sequestration is his fault. He released a statement last night after the close of business that placed the blame squarely on the shoulders of Republicans in the Senate, saying Republicans in the Senate faced a choice about how to grow our economy and reduce our deficit, and instead of closing a single tax loophole that benefits the well-off and well-connected, they chose to cut vital services for children, seniors, our men and women in uniform, and their families. The president will meet with the leader of the Republican Senate he blames for sequestration, Mitch McConnell. Speaker Boehner will join them, as will Democratic leaders Senator Harry Reid and Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi.
We might as well get a pink slip from the office of the Speaker and the Republican Conference. Unless the House GOP stops the mindless across-the-board spending cuts, you too could lose your job.
That's Nancy Pelosi. Johnny, your take?
Well, it's just a new level of incredulity in my mind, because, first of all, I think it's a 3% cut, which they haven't rounded to keep track of what they're spending within 5 or 10%. They even know what they're spending within 5 or 10%. 3%? It's not even the amount they increase the budgets every year. There's nothing here. So if they want to cut things that we'll notice to make some sort of a point, I don't know. There's nobody in any organization that I know of or any organization I'm around that would have a job if they performed it like they're performing it. But they're running it. They're running it, Mike. I don't know how. I haven't got a whole lot more to say.
Oh, you're right. I mean, it is what it is, and I don't know the stuff. You can't say, you know, he 6 months ago, a year ago, he let this thing come to this, Obama did, and all of a sudden now it's the Republicans' fault. Well, it's everybody's fault when you're spending like we're spending in this country. Could there be some tax adjustments? Absolutely. They could do some things for the tax code. They should cut some of the loopholes off. I agree with that. But my God, you got to cut spending. You got to get rid of all these entitlement programs. You're killing it.
Well, we don't have the money if we cut loopholes to make a difference. Again, there's no indication they're going to stop the rate of their spending. Obama's actually losing ground because 3% is such a minuscule number that even the average American not paying attention is starting to think, well, Obama, he's crazy if he thinks that, first of all, that you can't cut 3%. And second of all, you're always blaming the Republican. That's all we hear, Republican. There's a point which, you know, he's just screaming, ranting. I mean, Nero fiddling made more sense than what I'm seeing. I mean, at least Nero was playing an instrument, Steve, when Rome burned. Good grief.
All right, let me play you a fascinating angle to the week's stories. And this is Bob Woodward, who came out and essentially said, when it comes to sequestration, it was the president. And this is Bob Woodward, the famous Watergate guy, number one print guy probably in the world right now. No question, a Democrat. Bob Woodward comes out and says the sequestration was initiated by the White House. Then he says that this is madness, what the president is doing. Then the White House, he says, threatened him.
What we're talking about here is not a fact. He's not arguing with a fact, because beforehand he said we're just not going to see eye to eye on this. It's an interpretation. Obviously, he didn't like being challenged on this at all. Out in the great public, which is much more important than those of us in Washington, to say the least, they're wondering, you know, what the hell is going on here? It's not the way to operate in a White House. It's not, as you know, when somebody says you're going to regret something, particularly somebody in a position of power like Gene Sperling.
All right, and then the White House, Jay Carney.
You cannot read those emails and come away with the impression that Gene was threatening anybody.
Okay, all right, didn't threaten him. Johnny, your take?
Well, it's typical. Well, they're going to deny anything that doesn't sound good. I don't know whether he was threatening them or not. I mean, they didn't like it, and maybe it's a little bit of a bigger deal, but they're going to try to intimidate. I think anybody in public office, you know, kind of pushes back when you hear criticism that you don't like. But it's time for the White House to consider some of the criticism they're getting, because it's coming from all sides, and their plan is not well thought out, and it's not making any sense. And it's not true. I mean, we talked about this for the last 2 or 3 years, and we hoped we'd get a new administration. We got the same one, and it seems to be more of the same thing, Mike. It's just more of the same.
Well, the only thing I learned early in life, the leaders lead. If you don't lead, and you take the bull by the horn sometimes, and, you know, it's not going to always be popular with your party or what, but you do the right thing for America, for the country. But the thing that bothers me is I don't know that they know what's the right thing right now. They think there's only one right thing. It's the right thing for the party, to get it their way. And I think that's wrong. I think there's two sides to every story. And if you're not willing to look at both sides, then I think you're a fool.
Well, I just think that the general problem is government is spending too much money and getting bigger than the American people want. And it's supposed to be the people's government. We clearly, by a large majority, want less spending. We're worried about the deficit. Each of us has our own pet programs we want. But everybody would cut 3%. But, Steve, they're not cutting anything.
No.
Listen, let me make sure once again to point out that this year we will spend more money than last year with this slash.
Yeah.
We're going to spend more money this year than last year. And they're talking about taking money from the women and the children. Oh, my. Steve, we're spending more money this year than last year.
Yeah.
No one's cutting anything.
Yeah. It's called.
And so we keep getting the same song and dance. And will it ever come to a breaking point? I got to be honest with you. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I would guess yes. But I can't tell you, because when maybe, Mike, we're getting up to $20 trillion in debt here pretty soon. So what does that mean?
You hit it right on the button. It's a drop in the bucket. It's not going to do anything, you know. And that's the thing. A 3% cut in spending is nothing. I mean, it's absolutely nothing. But, you know, what you're saying is true, but how many people understand what you're saying? I mean, how many people want to listen?
So I don't think anybody understands what
that's what I mean. That's what bothers me.
And certainly not the people who are pulling all the strings and pushing all the buttons. So it's a little bit precarious, Steve. But
everybody in Washington spins it their way. Now, there's a way to spin it your way every way in, but that's not what's best for the country. So that's
right.
What they're doing.
Well,
so I don't care what your politician is. They're all spinning it their way.
It's called baseline budgeting, and what happens is every year a program gets an automatic raise of whatever it is, 3 to 8 to 10%. And then if you take a 7% raise and move it to 5% increase, they call that slashing the budget. So
call it losing jobs, and they were handing out pink slips to people 2 weeks ago before we even knew we had any sort of a cut in areas they weren't even going to cut. And then when you press them on it, it's like, well, we had to make these changes anyway. But
right. You're
playing politics, and you're playing with our economy, and we have certain rules. Certainly they're outside of any bounds or any rules ever set for any economic sense. And what will really happen, nobody really knows. And we're trying to say, as American people, I think from both sides, come on, can you get it under control? And they aren't responding. We're not getting it. We're getting fights, and we're getting some that'll bring up the point, you know, you're right, we're spending too much, but nothing's getting done about it, except, you know, what we're hearing, which isn't much. And I hope they don't clog up the airports, Mike. They're talking about cutting TSA services and some airport services, which will clog up airports just to make a point. So
yeah, it was quite a message of doom. There's no question the world is going to come to an end if this thing goes through.
Well,
and that's not true either. I mean, that's
not right.
But, you know, it's not right.
Well, and I guess the president met with a few leaders last night for 7 minutes. They're planning to sit down today. And, again, it's hard to understand how things can get done when you're not even talking face-to-face and everything is so contentious and everybody runs to the microphones. It is crazy. So I refer to the movie Ghostbusters and Bill Murray.
Hey, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
That's pretty much what was promised here as today's sequestration begins.
Well, you know, Steve, Mike made a point about leadership, and really, in America, we have a lot of respect for the office of the presidency, and we will listen. And he's not leading. He's picking a fight. He's not trying to compromise. He leads with, we need to compromise, and it's going to be this way or no way, and if the Republicans don't compromise, as in agree with everything I say, then it's their fault. And that's not leadership. We're getting the message that, you know, he really doesn't want to fix anything, but I don't know what he wants. So I think
he wants a Democratic House is what I think they want.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. I don't think it's going to work. And well, I think he's slipping, Steve. I think this is not working. He's even said, reports are that he says, man, this isn't working. But Mike, again, points out what's not working. What's not working is they're not trying to help do what's best for the whole country. And that's what they need to be doing, not playing a political strategy that, quote, works or doesn't work. That's just what bothers me.
It's Johnny and Mike Ditka here on ESPN 93.5, the new Sunny 95.3. It begins the search for the next pope.
The Dean of Cardinals sent a letter calling all 207 princes of the church to meet Monday morning, but only 115 of those under 80 will lock themselves in the Sistine Chapel for the conclave and elect the next head of the world's billion-plus Catholics. We expect to find out Monday when voting begins.
Yeah.
The Vatican says a new pope should be on the throne of St. Peter's by Easter.
Okay.
The Vatican, Cordy Walsh, Fox News Radio.
I don't think we'd ever get, like, Cardinal Dolan. Mike, do you think we'd ever get American Pope? Is there a chance?
No, I don't think so. I really don't. Who knows? But I don't think so, really. I think that when you look at Catholicism is so much bigger, I think, in other parts of the world, even than it is in this country. To me, it appears that way anyways. And I think the leader will come from somewhere else.
Well, and that's always interesting to the process, and we'll see. They were saying there could be a shot at an American pope. Never has been one.
There's a guy from Quebec, so I guess that would count as North America, that they're thinking perhaps, but there's been several mentioned. You'd think that with 115 eligible to vote, I think you have to get two-thirds. They vote until they get two-thirds support. So it's Father, Son, Holy Ghost, but essentially they're human beings with, a little politicking. And if it's good and honest, I guess politicking is okay. But certainly some of that will go on.
Well, and, they pick a leader of the Catholic Church, and they've had good leaders, I think. I think the popes have been strong leaders. And so they've had, they've been criticizing this one for this, that, and the other. But it's an important spot. That top spot's an important spot, as we know, Steve.
It is, and I think America needs a revival, a spiritual revival, and I think an American pope would be awesome. I would love to see that.
Well, that'd be cool.
It would be awesome. I just think you ought to get Mike Ditka and Bowie Daly, good Catholics. Let's just ask them and just move forward. I think those two could come out of some building with smoke flying out the window, and we could do it that way.
Our smoke.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
all right. We move to this crazy story this week. Would any of you get in a space capsule for 501 days with your spouse to go around Mars? This is the ingenious plan of a millionaire innovator that wants to send a married couple around Mars. That's a long time. 501
days.
What's that?
500 days.
501.
Come on, man.
That's over. That's almost 2 years. Let's see.
A long time.
Year and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got nothing to do with whether it's your spouse or anybody else. I don't know about that move.
First of all, the guy that's inventing all of this said he wouldn't get in it. And so the odds of actually returning to Earth are probably pretty slim. But I suggested, Johnny, in this day and age of American Idol and reality television, there'll be couples lined up for this.
They may. I would not be surprised. But you won't see me in the line.
I don't think so. Well, see Mike and Diana Ditka, maybe not?
No, I don't think
so. Let me ask you this, though. Now, you said they'll probably never get back?
Well, I just think that based on this guy starting this in his garage, they've contracted with NASA on a few things, but they're kind of making this as up as they go, and they're going to...
Oh, my God. Why would anybody want to do that?
Well,
spend 501 days in space and the rest of your life in space.
Yeah, but why would anybody want to go on the Jerry Springer show? You can find people for anything.
Oh, yeah. You're right. You hit it.
I don't know, Steve. I don't know if they'll even get out, escape Earth's gravitational field, but I don't know anything. I wouldn't do that. I'll be gosh.
501 days in orbit. It's crazy. All right. Basketball, NBA, brawling. When there's a fight in the NBA, I mean, how do you control that, Mike?
I don't know that you can. I don't know that, you know, in sports, it gets so competitive and, you know, you never know what starts to a daggone thing. But these are big guys and they're strong guys. You know, they got great wills and discipline and everything. But when something goes wrong, you know, you go off the edge. I mean, I don't know how you stop it. I'll be honest with you. I mean, the suspensions, yeah. But the only way you can hurt those guys is you got to hit them in the pocketbook. And if you hit them in the pocketbook enough, I guess that's the way it happens. That's the same in football. I mean, if a guy's got a lot of flagrant penalties, you got to hit him in the pocketbook, and then maybe he'll understand because that's what affects him.
Well, they do sometimes really put the suspensions out, and you're right. There's nothing else you can do. What's Billy Crystal going to do? He played a referee in the NBA once. What's he going to do about it? About those guys fighting?
Yeah, right.
Except get his head knocked off.
Yeah.
We have one of my favorite officials. I think he's 71.
Wow.
I think he's still officiating, but he's not going to break those guys up. But, hey, you know, it's they put a lot into it, and you know how they get a little trash talking going here and then an elbow there, and, boy, that's tough. They're in their 20s.
Yeah, it's incredible. All right, it is March, and I think, you know, I love the Super Bowl. I love all of that. But, Mike, in my mind, the March Madness and the brackets and basketball in the NCAA, I think that's the best sporting event for me because it lasts so long.
Well, you know, it's great. You know, because of the way it's set up, you know, you got teams from all over, small colleges, big colleges, and it doesn't matter. In one game of basketball, anybody can beat anybody. Gonzaga is going to be a number one seed.
Yeah.
And that's not a very big school, guys. And you say, well, look at the schedule. I don't care who they play. They beat them. And I think that's the essential thing. You look at these, and I understand these Big Ten schools are good schools, they're good teams, and there's so many of them that they can beat each other. I understand all that. But when you get into that, March Madness, I mean, to me, it's a great thing. You know, it's an automatic elimination. You move on. If you win, you go home. If you lose.
Well, and it's everybody has a shot. That's the other thing. I remember that, Jimmy Valvano.
64 teams, right?
Yeah, they're 68. 60, well, they do a play-in. I think it's even 68 now. I think
North Carolina State with Jimmy Valvano, they were not going to bake the tournament. They had a losing record, but they won their conference. They have a conference tournament, which gives you an They won the national championship, and they were down, I think, in every single game in the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But they won every game and won the national championship. And so that's what can happen. And you know, you get all manner of stories, and it's a lot of fun because they're great kids, they're great athletes, some great coaches. We'll probably see Tom Izzo there again, one of the best coaches, the Michigan State coach. Somehow or other, he's showing up in the Sweet 16 most of the time.
Yeah, and I tell you, Indiana to me looks about as good as you got. I mean, they're just really, really a good basketball team. I think the Hoosiers have a real shot to make a deep run.
Well, and so does anyone who beat the Hoosiers.
Well, there you go, the Fighting Illini. It's
didn't
awesome.
We beat Gonzaga, too?
Yeah, we beat Gonzaga at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is, you know, somebody could come out of the pack in this thing and really make a run. Just like you said, North Carolina State, the year they did it. It was tremendous. Win your conference, win the Big Ten, conquer, you're right there.
One of the more sickening runs we can think of, Stevie, when Michigan went on a tear. In 1989, that was our national championship there. But they won the national championship. Fisher took over. The coach got fired.
Yeah.
And they won six in a row. So that's exactly what we're talking about.
It was 89. This guy, Bill Frieder, took a job at Arizona, and Bo Schembechler said, we're going to have a Michigan man coach. So they elevated the assistant, Steve Fisher. They win six straight. Come on. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, Steve Fisher, he's done well. But no, that's a great tournament. I agree. It's a fun time. And it goes on, what, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, it starts March 19. I think the title's like April 6th or 7th or something. So it's really, really fun to watch a deep run. Finally, Mike, have you played at the Honda Classic at that golf course in Florida?
I have played the golf course. I played, the 15, 16, 17, they're good holes. There's no question about it. But you know, the wind's going to blow down there, guys. I'm down there now. It's only going to be a high today. Might get into the 60s.
It's overcast, and the wind starts blowing down here about 10:30 in the morning. And I don't care how good, and those guys are phenomenal. I watch them play, and I'm truly amazed how well they hit the ball, what great swings they have. But anything go wrong. I saw where Vegas was 6 under.
Yeah.
And then this morning he's 3 under now. He only played 2 holes. He lost.
What? I mean, Camilo Villegas shot a 30 on the back. A 30? That's what?
Wow, that's crazy.
I mean,
30 on 4 holes.
I'll tell you, it does make a difference. The cold wind affects anybody's play, but it's fun. I haven't been in that there, and Mike's gonna have to take me down there. That sounds good.
I tell you what,
that's worth playing, John. But there's so many courses worth playing. I've been playing with a guy down here, son, that he plays out of Sand Hills, out in Nebraska, which is one of the great golf courses. You don't hear a lot about it, but phenomenal. And I played it years ago. He asked me, do I remember? I said, I don't remember anything. I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. You're asking. You know, I play all these courses, all these guys out and play everywhere, and it's pretty daggone interesting. There's so many good golf courses.
No kidding.
Like
that's
true. I like to play combat right now.
Yeah.
I like it right there.
Gentlemen, we'll leave it there. We'll call you Monday, but always a pleasure to recap our week's news. Thanks so much, Mike. Johnny, I appreciate you.
All right,
thank you, too.
God
thanks, Mike.
You. Have a great weekend.
You too. Brother Johnny, Mike Ditka, the coach, Hall of Famer, and just great to have these unique discussions that we bring to local radio here in Champaign-Urbana, the only place in America, by the way, that Coach Ditka talks something other than football.
That's right.
And so it's a unique perspective. Like him or not like him, appreciate his opinion or not, he stands by what he thinks. He's absolute in his direction. It's fun to hear him. Hope you enjoy it. You're on ESPN Radio 93.5, the new Sunny 95.3.